So wait, let me, if you don't mind, I'm just going to give a background here, because the challenge with starting with Daf Tzadi Omid Aleph is that you have to know a little bit of what went on Daf Pei Tes Omid Beis. So we'll give a little bit review of Pei Tes Omid Beis and what Rava said over there. And we're talking about the case of what's called Avdei Malug, which means that a woman brought into the marriage an Eved. She owned an Eved Kanani we're talking about. And at this point, what happens is, it's very tricky, Nichsei Malug belong to both her and him, to the Isha and the Baal, but each in a different way. It's not a partnership, because a partnership means everybody owns everything. But what we're talking about is splitting up kinyanim, and this is perhaps the most fundamental kind of division that the halakha recognizes in kinyanim. There's something called a kinyan aguf, and there's a kinyan peros.
Okay.
So usually kinyan peros is a transitory kinyan. It only applies for a certain period of time.
Okay.
And at some point or other, it terminates. So, for example, in the case of marriage, the Baal gets this kinyan peros on the nichsei malug of the isha. That means that he has rights to enjoy any benefits that accrue from that possession, from that property. For example, let's say she brings in property, real estate, into the marriage. So he could rent out the real estate, and the rental fees are paid to him, and that he pockets, he puts it in the bank. However, she owns the goof. Now, what does that mean, she owns the goof? What that means is that although she cannot benefit right now in a temporary way from this property, because the payros of the property, the benefits belong to the Baal, but nevertheless she still owns the property. And what that means is that when the marriage terminates, either because he dies first or because he divorces her, now she owns the karka, she owns this property from A to Z, from beginning to end. He's out of the picture now, because his kinyan peros is a kinyan. His rights, the peros, is contingent on the fact that this marriage relationship exists. When he divorces her, now that marriage relationship has terminated, and therefore the possessions, the karka, now are owned totally by the isha, by her. So that's called kinyan guf. She owns the guf, and he owns the peros. Now, Rava made a statement, which you'll see on the top of the Amud, Shichrur Mafkia Midei Shibut. Okay, now what does that mean? If there is a Shibut, okay, now what's the classical case of a Shibut? We call it in English a lien, L-I-E-N, or a mortgage. So let's say, if I borrow $1,000 from you, then you now have a lien on my property. Now, included in that property, in this particular scenario, is an Eved. So I own the Eved, but now this Eved is leaned to you, because you're the Malva, I'm the Lova. And if I default on the loan, you collect the Eved. Do I have an ability as a lover to be mafkia that shibut, to somehow undermine your shibut and completely null and void it, so that you cannot collect from that effort? So Rava says, yes, I can do so. And he offers various methods in which I can do so, one of which is called shichrur. Shichrur means that I own the Eved, and I can free the Eved. How do I free the Eved? I deliver into the Eved's hands a get shichrur. It's a special document, and once that document reaches the hands of the Eved, the owner of the Eved no longer owns the Eved. There are other dimensions to Shechrur, which are not so relevant to us, and that's Gerus, because the Eved Kanani has an incomplete Gerus, but once he receives Shechrur, his Gerus is completed. That's a more complicated sugya to itself in Masechta Gittin. Okay. Says Rava, the Shibud that the Malva has in the Lovez Eved is a temporary kind of Shibud. And it only exists as long as the Lova is the owner of this Eved. So the ownership of the Lova on this Eved is a condition in that Shibud. The Shibud exists only if that condition is met. And therefore the very moment that the Lova is Meshachrer the Eved, and now the Eved goes free, the Lova no longer owns the Eved, and in effect, he undermines now the Shibud of the Malva. The Malva no longer has rights to collect from this Eved because of the Hafkas Shibud. The undermining of that Shibud by virtue of the Shichrur, that's the Sheet of Rav. Any questions so far? Okay. So now, how does this connect to what we started with today? The case of a marriage relationship where a woman brings into that marriage an Eved Kanani, which means that as Nichsei Maluk go, the Baal, the husband, has rights to eat the peros, to enjoy the benefits of this Eved. So for example, all the work that the Eved does, and if for example, he's hired out for wages as a laborer, all those wages accrue to the Baal. However, as far as the Gufa Eved is concerned, like who will really inherit this Eved when the Baal is out of the picture, either he dies or he divorces his wife, the answer is the Isha, because she owns the Guf of the Eved, in this case, Nichsei Maluk. Now we want to know what happens if she goes ahead and she gives the Eved to get Shichrur. Does that undermine the Kinyan Peros that the Baal owns in the Eved? Because as we said at the outset, a Kinyan Peros is transitory. Can you give me another word for transitory? That's not a good word. It's a temporary.
Yeah, temporary.
Temporary, or it has a time limitation to it. Because right. He doesn't own the goof. He only owns...
It's conditional.
It's conditional. He owns the benefits that you can get from the Eved, the wages and the melacha and so forth and so on, but only conditional on the fact that the marriage relationship exists. Once that marriage relationship terminates, he's out of the picture. Oh. Now, here's the case. And this is going to be a problem for Rava. The case is that with regard to an Eved Kanani, there's a parsha called Shein V'ayin, which means that if the owner of the Eved, in this case an Eved Kanani, injures the Eved and removes the Eved's eye or the Eved's tooth, then the Eved goes free. Now the question is, what happens if she... Now what happens if she owns this Eved? But again, the Peros ownership of the Eved is the Baal's. That temporary kind of conditional ownership of the Baal is very similar to the ownership of a Malve through Shibud in the Eved of a Lova. So the Gemara establishes an absolute parallel between the Shibud of the Malve and the Eved of the Lova, which again we said is temporary and conditional, and the Kenyan Paris of the Baal in the Eved of Nisei Belug that she brought into the marriage, which is also temporary and conditional. And
does the Shibud of the Lovet permit him to have is he entitled to proceeds from the sale of the Eved? Or only to repossess the Eved in the event of default of the Lovet?
Right. As far as I know, he has no rights now. So it's a funny kind of equation here, because Shibud is not really identical with Kinyan Peros.
Right.
But the Gemara thinks that there's a very high level Shibud which is called an apotheke. And that apotheke fundamentally supersedes your classical shibut. Like, for example, if I borrow money from you, you as the malv have a general lien in all my properties. But then there's something called an apotheke where I single out one particular piece of property and I say to you, Mr. Malva, thank you for the halvah, I want to do you a favor, I want to calm you down, that if I default, I'm going to designate this karka as an apotheke. In fact, Eved is not karka, at least as far as Shibudim is concerned, but nevertheless, I can establish the Eved, designating him as an apotheke. And that gives the Malva very special rights, almost like a kinyan, in the Eved, which the Gemara here equates by parallel, by analogy, with a kinyan peros. Okay, good. It doesn't mean that the Malva is working the Eved. No, the Eved is working for the Lova. But in event that the time comes for payment, for repayment of the loan, and the Lova doesn't have the money, the Malva exercises or implements his very fundamental shibud, which is called an apotheke, and takes the Eved. Unless, says Rava, the Lova went ahead and he was Meshachar the Eved. He freed the Eved. Because as we said before, with all due respect to Shibudim, and even the strongest level of Shibudim, they are conditional. And the Shibud that the Malva has in the Lova's Eved is conditional on the fact that it is the Lova's Eved. Once the love is Meshachar, the Eved, that's it. And that's Rav. The problem is that in the case of an Isha, there's a machlokes between two brisos, right? The brisos, of course, is authored by Tanoim, so Rav can't argue with the brisa. One brisa says that if she went ahead and she removed a limb of the Eved, that's called Rosh Eivarim, an eye or a tooth, other Eivarim, then he, the Baal, loses his rights, his peros rights, to the Eved. Why? Because the very moment she took out the Eved's eye, the Eved goes free, and the Shibud that she has to the Baal, which is called Kinyan Peros, is conditional on the fact that it's her Eved. Now, she took out the eye of the Eved, it's like she was Meshachar the Eved, and that's it. Fartik. Ball game over. The Eved is no longer related to the Isha. The other Brisa says, no, that when she takes out the eye of the Eved, or the tooth of the Eved, that cannot undermine the ownership that she has in the Eved, because her ownership is incomplete. Why is it incomplete? Because this Eved, has, insofar as it's Nichsei Malug, is Kinyan Peris to the Baal. And basically the Brisa says that because of this this dual ownership on this Eved, which is respective to both her in terms of Guf and him, the Baal, in terms of Peros, precludes anyone's ability to be Meshachar the Eved. In other words, if you and I are partners in an Eved, you could be Meshachar your ownership in the Eved. I don't have to be Meshachar my ownership in the Eved. And that's the famous case of Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin. But in the case of Kinyan Peros and Kinyan Aguf, where we split them between two owners, neither one of them has enough of an ownership to be Meshachar the Eved, which is bad news for the Eved. In this case, according to the second price, it's good news for the Baal, because he wants to continue within the marriage relationship to eat the peros of the Eved and enjoy the malacha and the wages that the Eved brings in. Even though she went ahead and took out the eye or the tooth of the Eved, he, the Baal, remains with the Kinyan peros, and material, shall we say, monetary right that he has in the Eved is not removed, according to the second Brisa, because she cannot be Meshachar the Eved. She only has a partial Kinyan in the Eved. She doesn't have a Kinyan in the Gufa Eved. Now, it could be that you and I would be happy to say that Rava fits in very beautifully with the first Brisa, because the first Brisa says that the very moment she takes out the tooth, knocks out the tooth of the Eved goes free, and the Baal forfeits his kinyan peros. That is a beautiful analogy or a parallel to Rava's statement that in the case of the Lova, who set up an Eved as an apotiki for the Malva, and then he went ahead and he was Meshachar the Eved, is Shichur Mafkia Midei Shibud, and the Malva loses his rights to the Eved. He can no longer collect his chov from the Eved, even if the Lova defaults. Why? Because the Lova, despite the Shibud, and it's a high level Shibud of the Malva, has the ability to be Meshachar the Eved. And therefore we can take it a step further. Let's say the Lova would knock out the eye of the Eved. That too, according to Rava's logic, would be Meshachar the Eved and be Mafkia the Shibud of the Eved to the Malva. So that works out beautifully according to Brisa number one. We'll call it Roman numeral number one. And that Brisa states that if the Isha went ahead and took out the eye of the Eved, insofar as she owns the goof of the Eved goes free, and that's Mafkia, the Kenyan Peros, which is a kind of a quasi-shibud of the Baal. But the second Raisa tells us that neither the Baal, who has Kenyan Peros, nor she, who has Kenyan Guf in this Eved of Nitzli Malum, neither one of them could be Meshachar the Eved. She can't be Meshachar the Eved by virtue of the Shibud that this Eved is Meshubah to work for the Baal through Nitzli Malum. That contradicts Rav. And that's going to be Lema Rava Tanoihi. Shall we say, therefore, that Rava's statement that Shichur is Mafkia Midei Shibud is dependent upon a machlokus amongst the Tanoi? And whenever you see Lema Kitanoi, in the case of a statement of one single Amora, you know the Gemara is not happy. In other words, we don't want to box in Rava to reflect one particular shita, namely the shita of the first brisa, we'll call brisa Roman numeral number one, when Rava's opinion is contradicted by the second brisa, Roman numeral number two.
Right, Rabbi Berzon, if an Amora can't fix a position that contradicts a Mefarsh brisa or Mishnah,
right.
His position has to square with both. If there's two contradicting Tanaic positions, his position has to square with both, or should square with both.
Yeah, if all things are perfect, you know, l'chatchila, obviously, what happens throughout Shas over and over again on every page of Shas is you could have machlokas amoraim, and then the Gemara will say lema kitanoi, which means that I have an earlier machlokas which parallels this later machlokas. Okay, so one of the Amoraim holds like one Tana, and the other like the other Tana. That's not terrible. But even in that case, you'll notice that the Gemara bends backwards to try to say no. One of the Amoraim, you know, speaks out and says, no, I can work out according to both Tanoim. And the other one says, I can work out according to both Tanoim. We always want to, if we can, avoid a situation where, and in this case it's even more pressing because we don't know that anyone disagrees with Rava. So to tell us that we found a Brisa, in this case Brisa, Roman numeral number two, that contradicts Rava, that's not something that we're very happy with, you know.
So, Rabbi Rosen, Lema is always a Kasha, not a Shiloh.
I don't know how to answer your question, Evan, because it depends. Sometimes Lema Ketanoi is more of an analytic statement. It's not a question. Lema Ketanoi. But more often than not, you're right. If I were to teach methodology of Talmud, one of the rules of I would give over to my Talmud would be whenever you see Lema Ketanoi, it's an uncomfortable position. We're going to try to work it out that this... Also, the very fact that Amoraim are arguing about something that predates them and goes back to the time of the Tanoim, that itself is uncomfortable. But moreover, to have a matching in which, let's say, Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda and Shmuel holds like the Chachamim, that's not good. You know, we'd rather see if we can work it out according to everyone. So what the Gemara is saying now is that according to the second brisa, which says that if she takes out the eye of the Eved, she cannot be Meshachar the Eved because of the fact that he, the Baal, has a Shibud, which is called Kinyan Peros in this Eved. That itself contradicts Rava. And Rava, in the case where a Lova sets up an Eved Knani as an Apotiki, and therefore transfers over to the Malva a very powerful, a high-powered lien, that's very hard to undermine that lien, Rava says, nein, if the Lova goes ahead and he's Meshachar the Eved, he nulls and voids the Shibud, even of an Apotiki that the Malva has in this Eved. And the parallel that the Gemara assumes is that a woman, if she takes out the eye of her Eved Knani, which is Nichsei Malug, that should be a Shechrur, that should undermine the Baal's Shibud, which I call with inverted gavas, meaning the Baal's Kinyan Peros in the Eved. And that's what we call Lema de Rava Tanoihi. Shall we assume that Rava is a machlokes tanoi? Because again, since Rava holds, I'm reading the footnote here, since Rava holds that the shichrur is mafkia, the shibud of the Baal, what about the Tana of the second Brisa who holds that when the Isha takes out the eye of the Eved, she cannot do so? I mean, that otsos, hapolas, hashem, is not powerful enough to remove her ownership and be Meshach the Eved because she has a Shibud, or the Eved himself is Meshubad to the Baal. And what the Gemara is going to do now with the word lo, which you'll see on the second line, is to try to work it out in such a way that everybody could square with Rav. But even the second Raisa could square with Rav. You want to read that? Lo. Oh,
everybody agrees with Rava.
Agrees with Rava. Now, if everyone agrees with Rava, now our problem is to figure out the second Brisa. Why in the second Brisa, when she, the Isha, takes out the eye of the Eved, that does not generate Shibu, that does not generate a Shichur of the Eved? Why is that so?
Bahacha, Amuha Rabbanin, Shibuud the Baal. Here the rabbis strengthen the husband's lien through the enactment of Usha, so that it cannot be broken through emancipation.
Alright, so let me try to take a shot at this in my own language and see if I could enhance our understanding of this Gemara. Shibudim are very sensitive, you know, they're very complicated. And very often the Rabbanon will step in to the picture, they'll meddle with this Shibud, even though, again, you know, Lechora, why do the Rabbanon care? We're going to have to answer that question. If there's a possibility, according to Rava, for someone to be Meshachar the Eved and remove someone else's Shibud, and that certainly is Rava's view, why would the Rabbanon tamper with that and decide to change it? And in the Gemara's language, Ilmua Rabbanon l'Shibud d'Baal. They want to give chizuk, the Rabbanon want to give chizuk to the Shibud of the Baal in the Nichsei Maluk. Oh. So why do they want to do so? So if you take a look at Rashi, back on Peiches, alright, we're not going to look it up now, but let's leave it out because I know that, you know, we have to end at a certain point. But what Rashi says is that there's a concept, a unique concept in the Chachamim's halacha of marriage, and that's called Eva. The Chachamim will stand on their head to avoid Eva. We ourselves, when we learned Ksuvas, we saw something similar. When the Rabbanan instituted Ksuva, they wanted to cement the marriage relationship so that there's an albatross hanging over the head of the Baal. He can't just decide, wake up one morning and say, well, she, you know, she burnt the toast, I'm going to give her a get. He's going to have to pay through the nose for that. That's called masayim in the case of a first marriage. Kedei shelo tehei kalabein of laotzia. Here too, the Rabbanon want to avoid a kind of eva, friction. And the Rabbanon want to make sure and guarantee that the schus habal, in this case in the Eved, but in general in Nichsei Malug, is a very strong schus. Because again, you know, the way that Chazal understood Ksuba and the way they designed the Ksuba and they designed the marriage, there's a lot of quid per quo, which means that he'll support her, but she has to give him her assets, or he, you know, let's say he has a chiyuv to redeem her, you know, if she is captured. There are various responsibilities that fall on the shoulders of the Baal within the framework of a ksuba, and therefore we want to give the Baal a good feeling, you know, that he's also getting his due is coming to him. If we want to give him an Eved Knani, which again is worth a ton of money, you know, this is a healthy, strong Eved, and he brings in major wages, and now the Baal is all contingent, you know, his whole status vis-a-vis this Eved is dependent upon the goodwill of the Isha, and she can take action on her own and be Meshachar the Eved and be Mafkia his Shibud, you know, the Shibud that he has, that we don't want to do. And therefore the Chachamim stepped into the picture here, and what they did was they instituted what we call Ilmua L'Shibud HaDabal. They're going to upgrade the Shibud of the Baal. Now, if you see Tosus, the Maskel Ilmua, Tosus points out that the first Brisa that says that if the woman takes out the tooth of the Eved, that is Meshachar the Eved, and therefore Mafkia the Kinyan Paris of the Baal, that Tana, the first Brisa, never bought into this idea of Ilmua Rabbanon L'Shibud HaDabal, that the Rabbanon upgraded and strengthened the Shibud that the Baal has in the Isha.
That Tana just disagreed with that the Rabbanon should, or that they did?
That there are, again, which Brisa are you talking about, the first or the second?
The second Brisa.
The second Brisa says the Rabbanon did this. You know, they stepped into the picture and they said this is not a classical Shibud.
Sorry, so the first Brisa, that Tana said that the rabbis just didn't do this, or that he doesn't agree with the fact that they did it?
Well, again, let's just make sure we get first and second. We're on the first Brisa agrees with Rava.
Right.
And that means that the Rabbanon upgraded the status of the Isha. Just one second. No, I meant right and I was wrong. The second Brisa is the Brisa that disagrees with the equation, with the analogy between Rava and Nichsei Malug. Because the second Brisa holds that even though the first Brisa, which reflects the Shita of Rava, is correct, mi ikar adin, you know, if all things were equal, but when we get to the marriage relationship, here's where the Rabbanan stepped in, and ilmua Rabbanan l'shibud HaDabal, and they undermined her ability, the Isha's ability, to be Meshachar the Eved. That's the second Brisa. The first Brisa holds that, let's go back to ikar adin, the Rabbanan, the first Brisa of that Tana holds, I deny this whole thing, that the Rabbanan never got involved here. They left things as is. Now, I have here a footnote in the name of the Chassam Sofer. Now, I don't know if you have the same footnote. I'll just read to you, you know, what he says. He writes, Nechleku, what are they arguing about? Im mashech shivu chachamim es habal kilokeach shal ha'isha b'nichsei malug haynu rak liachar misa aval b'chayeha heim nechshovim legamri kishalo v'yotzim b'shem v'ayin o shegam b'chayeha hu nechshov kilokeach. So the Chassam Sofer, I think, is closer to what you wanted to suggest. Both Brises agree that the Rabbanon stepped in and they want to meddle here and change the Ikar HaDin. The question is, at what point in time with regard to the Baal and the Isha did they meddle in? Meaning the following. If let's say she sells the Eved. So everybody agrees in that case that when she dies, the Baal continues to eat the Peros. And the Lokeach who bought that Eved, the Baal has the right to say to him, go fly a kite. You're out of the picture. And that's called Takanas Usha. Okay, we'll talk about that later, but the point is that after she dies, everybody agrees, there's no machlokas about this, that the Baal has a strong Shiva, that Ilmua Rabbana L'Shibudu the Baal. Why? Because, again, the Baal should only have rights to eat the peros as long as she's alive. Now she dies. The marriage is over. Why does he have the right now to take the karka away from her buyer? You know, the lokeach who purchased that eved from her. And the answer is because the Rabbanan upgraded the ownership rights of the Baal after her death. Our machlokas is addressing a case where she took out the eye of the eved during her lifetime, obviously. And the machlokas Tanoim says the Chasam Sofer is, did they go as far as strengthening the Baal's chus and his shibud, his kinyan peros, even during her lifetime? So the first brisa says no. They strengthened her. His shibud and his kinyan peros, but only after her death, but not during her lifetime. And therefore, if she takes out the eye of the eved, it's like we saw here in Rava, is shichrur mafkir midei shibud, and he's out of the picture. The Baal is out of the picture. But the second rice is of the opinion that even during her lifetime, they still upgraded the shibud and the bailus of the husband as if he owns the eved. And therefore she cannot be Meshachar the Eved. If she knocks out his eye, nothing happens. But now we're up to V'ibayis Ema.
V'ibayis Ema. D'chulialma, leis mugu, lahani tanai, takanat usha. If you prefer to say that everyone agrees that those tanayim do not subscribe to the enactment of usha, v'hacha, the kinyan perot, kinyan aguf, dami, kamaflige. So in here they disagree as to whether ownership of the rights to the produce of a property is tantamount to ownership of the property's essence.
So let me just try my hand at this, if you don't mind. What I think the Gemara is suggesting is that this whole business about Ilmua Rabbanan L'Shibuda Dabal, that the Rabbanan stepped in, as we said before, to meddle and intervene in order to upgrade the status of the Baal vis-a-vis Kinyan, the Kenyan Paris that he has in Nitzli Malug, that's all based on Takanas Usha. In Usha, they were very worried about the Baal and the relationship between the Baal and the Isha, and to avoid any sort of Eva, and therefore they stepped in and they upgraded the Baal's Kenyan Paris in the Nitzli Malug or the Eved in this case, who's Nitzli Malug, and that was the Takan of Usha. Therefore, if she sells the Eved, even after she dies, and then she dies, even though she sold it and the buyer claims ownership on this eved, no, the Baal could remove the buyer from this eved. All that is Takanas Usha. Our Brisos, whether it's Brisa number one or Brisa number two, rejected. They never accepted Takanas Usha. The Rabbanan never intervened to upgrade the status of the Kenyan Paris of the Baal. No, if that be the case, then the first brisa makes a lot of sense, reflecting the sheet of Rava, that if she takes out the eye of the eved goes free, and the Baal is out of the picture, because she no longer owns the eved. And the reason for that is simply because she owns the gufa eved. It's her eved. And therefore, if she takes out his eye, the eved goes free. What does the second brisa hold? Now we're in deep trouble. Because if the second brisa agrees that we reject Ulmei Rabbanan L'Shibuda Dabal, which means that we reject Hakonas Usha, then we should fall back to Rava's position, namely that she could be Meshachar the Eved. Or in the case of of a marriage relationship, not only could she be Meshach the Eved by taking out his eye, she could give him a get shichrur, she could sell the Eved. I mean, there are many things that she could do. But one of them is that shichrur is mafkiyah midei shivut. And that's Rava. So now we're stuck with the second brisa. So the Gemara now says that this machlokus between the two brises is not the way you understood it. A unique machlokus about whether the universal rules apply to a marriage relationship. Did the Chachamim step in for the sake of a marriage relationship and upgrade the shibud of the Baal in the Nitzei Melug in the Eved? No! This is not a question about marriage. This is a question about fundamental issues called Kinyan HaPeros. What is Kinyan HaPeros? It's a very weird kind of situation. You own something and then you give me rights to enjoy all the benefits. What is he called? To produce the fruit. I gave you the example of renting out the apartment and receiving the rental fees. You own all the benefits. So what do I own? Right? If I give you, again, I don't remember who gave what, but if I give you a Kenyan Peros, what really have I left for myself? Again, it means in the future, I can... let's say I can acquire ownership, if let's say I can inherit it, whatever it is, you know, if the relationship terminates and so forth and so on. But right now, Basher Husham, what is the nature of this Kinyan HaGuf? It's so abstract. Oh. So the Gemara says, Kinyan Peros ki Kinyan HaGuf Domei. That if you ask me who essentially owns this property, the answer is he who has the Peros. Because after all, what is property worth? It's worth the benefits, or as you say, the fruit. You own a tree. What good is owning a tree? Want to write your name on it? You know, carve out graffiti on the tree? Well, what's it worth? The answer is it's worth the fruits. If I own a field, what's it worth? I can produce wheat, I can produce fruits, whatever I produce. So therefore, Kinyan HaPeros is Kinyan HaGuf Domei. It is so powerful that it undermines the Kinyan HaGuf. And therefore, the Isha, if you hold Kinyan, and this is going to be the second price, if you hold Kinyan Peros to Kinyan HaGuf Domei, she really doesn't have anything substantial in the Eved. Because the one who really could sink his teeth into this Eved as a piece of property, the one who really can enjoy the benefits and exercise his ownership rights, is the Baal. Who has within the framework of the Ksuba Kenyan Peros.
So why divide it up into a bundle of rights? Why not? Why even have there be two distinct entities as far as the rights go? If essentially Kenyan Gufo is near meaningless legally.
Well, I wouldn't say Kenyan Aguf is meaningless. For example, the Chazon Ish is of the opinion that if let's say she needs to write a prusbul, like, yeah, I don't want to get it, but the halach of prusbul is that you have to have ownership over karka, otherwise you can't write a prusbul. So the Chazon Ish says that she could write a prusbul. Why? Because she owns the goof. Or for example, as we said before, when the marriage terminates, and let's say he divorces her or he dies, she takes over the full-fledged ownership over this character, over this real estate, because she owned the goof. In that sense, the goof is sort of futuristic. Right now, she doesn't own anything. But the Chazon Ish says, if she can make a prusbul on it, I mean, that's real ownership now. Then he says something else. Do you remember we once discussed something called a Kinyan Agav? Which no. Means, let's say you want to give me a diamond ring, which is metaltalin. So if you give it to me, agav, a piece of karka, I can be kona the diamond ring, the metaltalin, without even making a kinyan on the metaltalin. Here too, since she owns the gufa karka, or for example, the lova in the case of a halva owns the gufa karka, it's only the shibud and the peros that belong to the malva. Therefore, if somebody wants to give a gift of metaltalin to the Lova, he can acquire that gift anywhere in the world. It could be out in Japan. Agav his karka. Even though the karka and the metaltalin are miles away. Millions of miles away. Anyway, there are fascinating issues about My nafkamina, how does the ownership over the goof cut ice? You know, how does it express itself? Halacha l'maisa. But be that as it may, the second brice is of the opinion that she, if she takes out the eye of the Evid, is not mashachar the Evid. Why? Because her kinyan in the Evid is very limited, very flimsy, because it's the malva. Well, I shouldn't say the malva, it's the baal in this case, right? It's the baal who owns the peros. So even without takonas usha, and without olmua rabbanon l'shibude the baal insofar as he owns kinyan peros, is that kinyan aguftom. He really owns the essence of the Evid, if you can use those terms. Again, now keep in mind that's not the same in the case of Shutfin. In the case of Shutfin, as we said before, if one Shutaf takes out the eye of the Evid, then his ownership of the Evid, which is 50% of the Evid, is completely gone. That's Meshachar. Because again, a partnership is much different than Kinyan Guf and Kinyan Peros. In the case of partnership, they both own the entire Evid. Alright.
Okay.
The Gemara now wants to know, is there some sort of explicit source in Mishnah or in Brisos to analyze this question about how fundamental or how far reaching is a Kinyan Peros? Is it considered like a Kinyan Aguf or is it not? And the Gemara finds a machlokas in Brisos that Lechora really addresses this very fundamental issue. When you split the Kinyan Aguf and this Kinyan Peros, who really, you know, with a real proud owner, please stand up. So what's the introduction I want to give? There's a parsha in Shmos Chaf Aleph, which is called Yom O Yomayim, a day or two. What's this all about? If someone kills an Eved Knani, he's put to death, according to the Torah law. That's capital crime. That's full-fledged, genuine murder. Why? Because an Eved Knani, as we said before, is basically Jewish. He's obligated to mitzvahs no less than an Isha, than a woman. Okay. Now, what happens if Reuven attacks an Eved Knani and the Eved doesn't die immediately? So what we do is, we do something called an Umdana. An Umdana means we're going to wait, and even if we have to wait a month or longer, it doesn't matter how long we have to wait, to see if the Eved could survive the blow. If he dies, and the Umdana has it that he died as a result of the attack, then the Rotzeach is put to death. Obviously, that's not a specific halacha in killing an Eved Kanani. That's halacha in general in Ritzin. What's unique about Eved Kanani? If the attacker was the Adon, the master and the owner of the Eved Kanani, then the Torah says the following. When the blow was dealt, we're going to wait Yom O Yomayim, a day or two, which basically means 24 hours. That's, of course, it's half for one day, half for another day. Again, I'm not getting into that part of the sugya, but, and that's a deep sugya, but what we want to say is that if the Eved survives 24 hours from the moment that the death blow was dealt, then even though, listen to this, even though the Eved was killed by the Adon, we have no doubt, medically, and without autopsies, right? We have no doubt that the death of the Eved is directly attributable to the blow of the master. Nevertheless, the Torah says the master is potter. It's only when the master kills the Eved immediately, that means the Eved perishes, he dies within 24 hours, then and only then do we put the Adon to death. But the Torah was very compassionate with regard to the Adon, maybe because, you know, he has such a close relationship with the Eved that sometimes the Eved irks him or gets him angry or I don't know what. But let's call it Gzeiras HaKosuv. And I'll read the pasuk to you. The pasuk says, V'chi yake ish es avdo, if a man deals a blow to his own Eved, so umeis tachas yodo, if the Eved dies as a result of this blow, we put the Adon to death. But, ach means but. Ach im yom o yomayim yamod, if he survives for a day or two, lo yukam, we do not take revenge against the Adon, ki kaspo hu. Again, we have to see what that means, and the deep philosophical analysis that you have to know. And I always say that if you want to look for a contrast between Jewish law and civil law, you know, Eved is one area, because I don't know that, you know, secular law knows anything about Avod. Okay. Now, what's going to be our machlokas here between two brisos? Okay. So bepluked dani tanoi. You want to read this?
Bepluked dani tanoi. The time they disagree about the same issue that is the spirit of the following tonight. The tanya, if I was taught in a brisa, v'amocher avdo la'acher, if one sells his Canaanite slave to another, ufasak imo al minat sheyisham shenu shloshim yom. And the seller stipulates with the buyer that the slave should continue to serve him for 30 days.
So let me cut you off here for a minute, Evan. Who owns the goof of the Evan? The original master and owner, or the new owner? Because again, it was sold. And who owns the peros of the Evan? Because again, what we're ultimately looking for is a source for this split between the two dimensions of ownership, the Kenyan goof and the Kenyan peros. What would you say?
So Lachor, during this 30-day period.
Well, before we get to the 30-day period, I mean, obviously, if it's after the 30-day period, then the entire Eved, that's goof and peros, is owned by the buyer. But let's say within the 30-day period, what would you say?
I would say the mocher owns the peros, and the buyer owns the
excellent.
Owns the goof.
Excellent. That's what I thought. And now the question is going to be, what happens if one of these two gentlemen, whether it be the original owner, the seller, or the buyer, the new owner, one of them deals a death blow to the Eved? To which one of them should we extend compassion, you know, this divine leniency, I'm looking for a different, clemency, we'll call it clemency, and allow the law to say that, you know what? You killed the Eved, but you're not going to be liable for that. Why? Because the Eved survived for 24 hours. And the answer to this question really depends upon how you measure up Kenyan goof and Kenyan peros. If the most fundamental ownership of any piece of property is Kenyan peros, then in this case, for 30 days, the seller still retains for himself, that's called shir b'kinyan, what he left out of, he omitted from this sale, the kinyan peros. And the seller owns for this 30-day period, kinyan peros. If he deals a death blow to the Eved, just so you could say that the seller, insofar as he has the kinyan peros, he gets that clemency of Yom Yomayim. You could say, no, it's the buyer, because even during those 30 days, he owns the goof, and the primary kinyan is the goof. Okay, so that's one out of four possibilities. The second out of four possibilities is to switch it around and say, no, the main kinyan, well, what was the first possibility? That the Kenyan aguf is the main possibility, so therefore the clemency is offered, if I can use that term, is offered to the buyer. The other way is to say, no, Kenyan peros is the most fundamental primary mode or variable in a Kenyan, and therefore it's the mocher during that 30-day period who gets the clemency of Yom Yomayim. So we have two possibilities. Now we have a third possibility, that either one of them should be granted that clemency, because they each have, you know, a substantial kinyan. And then the fourth possibility is that neither one of them have clemency. So that's what we're going to see in this price.
Okay. Amochar avdo la'acher, v'zak yimo al menat shishamshenu shalashim. Rabbi Meir omer, rishon yeshnu bedin yomo yomayim. Rabbi Meir says that the first one gets the clemency.
First one means the original owner of the seller, right?
the seller be bnei shehu tachtav, because the slave is still under his authority.
Yeah, now I would say, I would leave out the word authority. I would say that the slave is still working for him, and he, the original owner, is still benefiting exactly as he did a day before the sale from all the work and all the wages and everything else. So that's called kinyan peros.
Okay. Kasava, because Rabbi Meir maintains kinyan peros, kinyan aguf dami. That the ownership of the rights of the produce of property is tantamount to ownership of the property's essence.
And again, in my language, I would say that according to Rabbi Meir, insofar as the main element in ownership, or the main expression of the primary mode of ownership, or variable dimension of ownership, is to enjoy the benefits. He's got the kinyan peros. He's enjoying the benefits. That's called the kinyan aguf, and that's called tachtov. Now, why does the Gemara use the word tachtov? Because if we go back to the pasuk that I quoted before, it says in that pasuk, umeis tachas yodo. So again, he translates that as authority. I translate it as ownership rights, to get the benefits. Now we get to number two, Rabbi Yehuda.
Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Sheni Yishna Beidin Yom Yoman. The second owner is subject to the rule of a day or two. Mipnei Yishu Kaspo. Because the slave is his property.
Because the word Kaspo is borrowed from the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Lo Yukam. And as we don't put him to death, why keep Kaspo? Who? Kaspo means primary ownership. And primary ownership is the goof. Again, even though at this point, for 30 days, he can't exercise his rights to enjoy the benefits of that goof, but he owns the goof.
Yeah.
Which means that he will get it after the 30-day period terminates. He can sell it. He can be magnish. I mean, it's really his. If he dies, then his heirs will inherit it. That's called kinyan. Peros lav kikinyan aguftam.
Okay. Rabbi Yosef Omer, Shneyam yeshnan bedin yomo yomayim, ze mipnei shu tachtav, ze mipnei shu kaspo. Because they each have the right to it because of these two svaras.
So one owns the guf, and that's called kaspo, and one owns the benefits, the peros, and that's called tachtav.
Mesapkale kinyan perot. Rabbi Yossi is uncertain about the ownership of the rights of the produce of property. E kinyan aguf dami. E la kinyan aguf dami. Mesapek.
Oh wait, stop here for a second. Rabbi Yossi is confused, right? That's what the Gemara says. He's in doubt. He doesn't know how we should define the kinyan peros. And until now, we had two polar extremes. Either kinyan aperos is really the guf kinyan, that's the main primary element, or kinyan aperos is secondary, and the kinyan aguf is primary. Rabbi Yossi was caught in between here. It's like, imagine if you were a spectator, an onlooker, and there's a great machlokes between two great rabbis, and you say, well, yeah, I hear it. And then you hear the other argument. Yeah, I hear that too. So he vacillated. So he was left with a suffix. Now, what do you do in this case when you're left with the suffix? That's the next line in the Gemara.
The suffix nefashot lahakil. So, if there's a suffix regarding, I guess, capital punishment, we're makel.
How does he does he give you a translation of suffix nefashot lahakil?
A doubt regarding capital punishment, we rule leniently, and exempts both the original and owner and buyer.
Right. I never understood why we needed that principle. I mean, what would you think? What was the avenue that we put someone to death in a suffix? We discussed this once, I think.
Yeah.
All right, now finally to finish the rice, so we get to Rabbi Eliezer.
Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Shneim Einan Bedin Yomo Yomayim. Neither gets the leniency. Zeh Livnei She'eno Tachtav, Zeh Lefi She'eno Kaspo. This one doesn't have the, he's not under his authority, or he doesn't have bias over him. And this one, he doesn't belong to him yet. It's not his property yet.
Right, so
Rabbi
Eliezer is unwilling to grant the Yom Yomayim extension, the leniency, to either one of them, neither to the Mocher nor to the Lokeach. In the case of the Lokeach, he's not willing to say so because Lokeach, during this 30-day period initially after the Mechira, has no rights. He cannot get any benefits from his Eved, from this Eved. Again, he has the theoretical ownership of Guf, but he doesn't own Peros. That's called Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Aguf Dami. On the other hand, he's not willing to extend the clemency of Yom Yomayim to the Mocher, because the Mocher so far has a chisar in kaspo, meaning he transferred ownership of the goof Hayavid to the lokeach. Okay, for a time being, on a temporary basis, he now has rights to eat the peros. But eating the peros on a temporary basis is not the fundamental dimension of kinyan. It doesn't define him, and the Eved is kaspo. And in a paradoxical sense, Rabbi Eliezer is the machmir amongst all these tanoim. He's unwilling to allow clemency in this case for anybody, which means that anyone who kills the Eved, whether it's this master or that master, the original master who has Kinyan Peros, whether it's the present Mocher, the Lokeach, the present master, neither one of them can enjoy the benefits of clemency, and now the Eved goes back into the universal potpourri of Ritzicha, which means that whenever the person dies, in this case the Eved dies, right, if somebody else killed the Eved, not the owner, then the Rotzeach is put to death. Amar Rava, my taima de Rabbi Eliezer. What is the logic that undermines Rabbi Eliezer? L'chora, mimanafshach. One of the two, whether it's the original owner who now sold it or the buyer who now bought it, one of them should be the owner of the Eved. I mean, if you hold Kinyan HaPeros ki Kinyan HaGuftami, then it's the original owner, the Mocher, who should be considered Kaspo, and he should have the clemency. If on the other hand you hold Kinyan Peros lav ki Kinyan HaGuf, then it's the Lokeach who has the Kinyan HaGuf. And you might tell me that Rabbi Eliezer vacillates back and forth, but that was the sheet of Rabbi Yossi that said, midin Safek, we're going to apply the principle of Safek Nefash Slahakel. And the answer is, says Rava Omar Kro, ki kaspo hu, kaspo hamiyuchad lo. Which means that Rava understands fundamentally, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Kinyan Peros is not Kinyan Aguf, and therefore the Mocher certainly doesn't have the benefit of this clemency, because all he has is a flimsy and limited temporary Kinyan Peros. But even if Kinyan Peros ain't a Kinyan Aguf, or I should say not even, but because, then the primary ownership is that of the Kinyan HaGuf, which means in this case the Lokeach. Why doesn't he go out? Why doesn't he get exonerated from the punishment, the capital punishment of Rotzeach, if the Eved Kanani survives for a day or two? And the answer is, says Rava, because the pasuk says Kaspohu. And why does the Torah add the vav, the possessive of kaspo? Could have said kesefu. Kaspohu means it's miyuchad lo, that he has total ownership. He's not willing to share the ownership with anyone else. But here in this case, the buyer has to share the ownership at least for the first 30 days subsequent to the mechira, because of the stipulation, the condition, the shear in the kinyan that the mocher stipulated. And therefore the eved is not considered kaspo to lokeach, not because of some universal halacha of kinyan peros ki kinyan aguftami. On the contrary, kinyan peros lav ki kinyan aguftami, but because of a specific requirement, the condition in yom yomayim of kaspo, meaning hamiyuchad lo. And our explanation is based on Rashi, but it reflects itself in many, many of the Rishonim. The problem is, however, with this approach, is that in the Sugya Baba Basra Daf Nun Amid Aleph, again there are two Lashonos there, but we'll mention the Lishna Basra, Amemar explains that Rabbi Eliezer holds that the Mechira is not a Mechira at all, that such a Mechira is an invalid Mechira. I mention Amemar in Baba Basra Daf Nun prematurely, because when I say the Mechira is invalid, That's not the case that we're dealing with here, of Hamocher es Avdo Lishloshim, and he says Lishloshim Yom Shisham Shenu Shloshim Yom. No, that's not the case. The case there is where she, in a marriage relationship, went ahead and sold the Eved. So let's get back to that a little bit later, because I see I jumped the gun on that. It's premature. What I would like to study with you is the relationship between this vice of Yom Yomayim and the four shittas mentioned therein, and the sugya of Avdei Malug, which we saw earlier, if she takes out the shade and the ayin of the Eved of Nitzei Malug. In other words, if this brisa that we're doing now about Yom Yomayim is recording a machlokas between Kinyan Peiros, whether it's Kikinyan Aguf or Lav Kikinyan Aguf, then it would seem that the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda here about the din of Yom O Yomayim, we have a problem here, because Rabbi Meir as not only one of the Tanoim here, but the first of the four Tanoim, he's of the opinion that Kinyan Peiros is Kikinyan Aguftam, and he's considered the Adon. Now, in the two brises regarding Hapolas Shein, the ayin of an Eved Knani, who is Nichse Molug, the first brise, brise number one, was of the opinion that if she, the Isha, takes out the Shein, and she has Kinyan Aguf, therefore the Eved goes free. According to the second brise, neither he nor she can, through Hapolas Shevi'ai, can be Meshachar the Eved, because they each have an incomplete kinyan. Rabbi Meir, on the contrary, says here in our brisa, with regard to the case of Yom Yomayim, that the din of Yom Yomayim applies exclusively to the original owner, the original Mocher, who has a kinyan peros. And that's very strange, because in the stira to two brisos with regard to Hapolas Shevi'ai, in none of the brises, not one sheet that maintains that Kinyan Peiros is so fundamental that if the Baal knocks out the eye or the tooth of the Eved, the Eved is Mishtachar. So how do we size up this whole thing? And this is really Tosus's problem here, Dibur Maskil Rebbe. And he says that there's a chiluk between the dinim. As far as the din of Shein V'ayin is concerned, which is relevant to Shichra Eved, Rabbi Meir agrees that the Kinyan Peiros of the Baal is not fundamental, not powerful enough to create a Shichra the Eved. Why? Because all he's doing in this Shichra is b'mafkia a Kinyan Peiros. He can't be mafkia the Kinyan Aguf, and therefore the Hapolas Shein V'ayin is not enough to be Meshachra the Eved. However, with regard to Yom Yomayim, and the Torah extended clemency to the Adon from a capital punishment, since the Eved is right now serving the Mocher, and Rabbi Meir holds that since the Mocher has a Kinyan Peiros, which is Kinyan Aguf, therefore it's logical that the din of Yom Yomayim should apply to him, namely to the original owner who has now Kinyan Peiros rights for 30 days. Now the Gemara analyzes the halacha of Mechiras Nichse Molug. Keman Azla, according to which shita was the halacha of a Meimar, does the halacha of a Meimar reflect the Omar HaMeimar Ish V'Isha Shemachru B'Nichse Molug? If both of them together, the Ish and the Isha, agree on a sale of Nichse Molug, Lo Asu V'Lo Klum, that Mechira is not valid. And I mentioned to you earlier, it was a little premature then, that according to one Lishna in the Gemara Bava Basra, the Lishna Basra in Bava Basra says, on Daf Nun, that according to Meimar, what we're talking about here is a completely invalid or voided Mechira. And again, this is, as the Gemara says here, Keman Ki Rabbi Eliezer. Just like as we saw in Rabbi Eliezer, that if the Eved Knani is split in its ownership between the original Mocher who maintains a Kinyan HaPeros for 30 days and the Lokeath, the buyer who owns the Guf, neither one of them are included on the Yom Yomayim, that Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, as the fourth Shita in the Braisa of Yom Yomayim, reflects l'chora the Lishna Basra Bava Basra, that according to Meimar, it's impossible for either one of them, whether it be the Mocher or the Lokeach, to create and establish a valid Mechira, because none of them, neither of them, have enough of a Kinyan to engender a Hakna. You can't transfer ownership on something if you don't have genuine ownership. However, the Lishna Kama there in Bava Basra maintains that according to Meimar, if they both agree and they cartel together to create this transfer of ownership to sell the Eved, then the Mechira is valid. Now they both, when I say they both join together, unite in the hand, you know, shake hands to create this mechira, what I mean is the owner of the kinyan peros and the owner of the kinyan in haguf. Or in the case of marriage, the owner of the peros is the baal and the owner of the kinyan haguf is the isha. If they agree together to sell nichsei melug, that sale is valid. Now, what does it mean, therefore, that a Meimar says lo osu velo klum? That language is a little bit difficult. So it means, for example, that if the Baal sells Nichsei Malug and then he dies, she can now take the karka out of the hands of the lokeach. If she sold the karka and she died, the Baal takes the karka out of the hands of the lokeach. That's called takonis usha. But if they both together, as an agreed transfer of ownership, agreed to be machne, in such a case, the mechira is actually valid. That's going to the Lishna Kama there in Bava Basra. So this statement of Amemar reflects the fact that each one, the Baal, the Isha, the Kinyan Peros and the Kinyan Aguf, can block the other one in terms of a sale, or as we expressed before, according to one Lishna Gemara Bavasa, to limit the sale to the lifetime of the Baal or the Isha respectively, is Kiman Kerabi Eliezer. L'chora, what we should say is that this sheet of Hamema really reflects the sheet in the previous braisa with regard to Yom Yomayim Rabbi Eliezer, who says that in order to be Meshach the Eved, we need that the Eved be Miyuchad Li'adon Mesuyam. Right, that's how he understood the pasuk of Kaspo in the possessive. He has exclusive ownership over the Eved, and therefore he is, to him, the Torah extends the clemency of Yom Yomayim. And therefore, it makes sense that if you want to be Meshacher and Eved Knani, there too the halacha would require, through the halacha of Apollos Shein V'ayin, an Eved that's miyuchad to one specific Adon, and that would be similar to the discussion here about Mechira, that in order to sell the Eved Knani, or we'll call it an irreversible permanent sale, there has to be an ownership on a bailus which is miyuchad, and since neither of them had that bailus is miyuchad, neither of them could, as the Maimer says, effectuate this long term sale. Now the Gemara wants to bring another braisa with regard to shichur eved. Mantana lohod etonu rabbanon misha chetzio eved vechetzio ben chorin vechein eved shel shnei shutfim ein yotzim. The braisas of the opinion that in the case of Eved Shutfim, now we have to be super careful here, and this is what they all point out here, that when it says in this braisa Eved Shal Shnutfim, this is not the classical use of the terminology Shutfim. We're talking about in our context Shutfim, meaning one owner of the Eved owns the guf and the other owns the Kenyan peros. And in this case, ein yotzin b'roshei varn sheinim chozrin, there's no din of yitzia, of hapola, of shein v'ayin, neither to the one who owns the guf, nor to the other one who owns the peros, because again, we need l'chora, what's called kaspo miyuchad los, which as the Gemara is going to point out in just a minute. What about this case of chetzio eved and chetzio ben chorin? Here's a case where there was a shutvis on an eved, and one of the two adonim gives the eved domim, and he receives domim from the eved. The eved buys his freedom from one of the adonim. He doesn't have enough cash or assets to buy his total freedom, and now as a result, the Eved was Kona himself for half, and the Adon can no longer be Meshabi the Eved. But nevertheless, since the Adon did not give a Shtar Shichru to the Eved, then it's Gufo Koni L'Adon. So again, the Eved buys his peros back from the Adon by paying that sum of money, but he, the Eved, still has not achieved his freedom because the Guf Eved still belongs to that Adon. And in any event, the Brisa here formulates and presents the halacha that there's no din of Yitzia Barash Evarim. Omalei Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, Hachi Amri Mishmei the Rav. This is what we have in the tradition of Rava, Rabbi Eliezer. He, once again, the fact that neither of them have enough of a kinyan in the Eved in order to effectuate the halacha of Shein, Hapola Shein V'ayin, that reflects the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. Milo Omer Rabbi Eliezer Kaspo Amiyuchad Lo. In other words, the Eved has to be Miyuchad to one of them, and if this one has the Kinyan Aguf, and this one has the Kinyan Peros, which is true for the case of Eved Shel Shnei Shutfim, again taking that phrase the way we took it, is since there's no Miyuchad Lo, therefore there's no din of Hapolas Shein V'ayin. In the original form of Rabbi Eliezer, in the case where someone sells his Eved but leaves himself the rights to enjoy the benefits of the Eved for the first 30 days, there's no Yom Yomayim, neither to this one nor to that one. This one, the Kinyan Peros, is lacking Kaspo, and this one is lacking Tachas. Is Hochinami Avdo Amiyuchad Lo. And that's what we're saying here in this new Brisa, that as far as Hapolas Shein the Avdo, we need Avdo Miuchadlo. Because again, the parasha says, V'chiyake Ishes Ein Avdo. What's Avdo? Avdo is Miuchadlo. In the case of Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin, there is no Avdo Miuchadlo because the Chatzi Ben Chorin is Shaykh to one, to one Adon, so he only has the goof. And therefore, vis-a-vis his ownership on the goof, he could not possibly create a shichur if he's motzi the ayin. And even though the other part that was not meshacher his half, and as far as his half is concerned, it could be considered perhaps miyuchad lo, and therefore he would be yotzei, but for that half he would be yotzei v'netilas rosh eivarim. But at least as far as the half that belongs to the Adon, who was meshacher his half of the Eved, he no longer has a kinyan on the peros of the Eved. He can no longer work the Eved, because his shichur is meaningful for that. But if the Eved never actually received the get shichur, then as far as gufo konui, that particular shutaf still retains his status as the owner of the guf. And therefore, there's no possibility within the context of chiyika, chiyake ishes ein avdo, that hapolas ayin would be meshachar the Eved. And according to the opinion of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Eliezer, Yehuda maintains, if you recall, that the primary mode of ownership is the Kinyan Aguf, the Kinyan Peres Lavka Kinyan Aguf, and therefore, if the Adon who owns the Kinyan Aguf is Meshachar the Eved, then that, I'm sorry, if he takes out the eye of the Eved, then that would be Meshachar the Eved. And that was the brisa that we said earlier back on Peites, that an Eved whose Nichsei Malug goes L'cheres B'Shem V'Ayin because of the Isha, because her Kinyan is that of Kinyan Aguf. According to Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, the Kinyan Peros K'Kinyan Aguf Dami, and that's why Rabbi Meir maintains that the original Mocher retains for himself Shloshim Yom of Kinyan Peros during that 30-day period. He himself is the owner of the Eved, because Kinyan Peres K'Kinyan Aguf, and therefore he gets the clemency of Yom Yomayim. In the case of Yitzia L'Cheres B'Shem V'Ayin, whichever Adon of these two that have this kind of so-called Shutvis, one owns the Guf, one owns the Peres, whoever owns the Peros, he is Meshachar the Eved. The Ravid has a different Shita, and he holds that according to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, the Chavos Kalechem Adonim Otzia L'Cheres Eschelko, that in the case of Kinyan HaPeres, Kinyan HaGuf, the Hapolas HaShein works vis-a-vis the one, you know, the Kinyan of Peros for the one who owns Peros, and vis-a-vis the Guf for one who owns the Guf. And this brings us to the Mishnah, which Amir Hashem will cover in the next shiur.